And welcome to this week's show. Roughly every 4 to 5 months, we like to have Dennis DeRosier on. He's Canada's leading auto analyst, talking about the auto industry and how it affects consumers out there. Dennis, welcome to the show. You're at your summer home, I understand.
Yes, I'm here enjoying watching the soybeans grow, you might say. So that's country living.
You're still dialed in, as we know, to the auto industry. How's the health of the Canadian market? It's a harbinger of the overall health of the economy, I would suspect. How are we doing for 2012?
Well, from a market perspective, we're way above expectations. We're tracking at about 1,650,000 to 1,660,000 units. To put that in perspective, last year we did about 1.58 million, and the year before it was about 1.5 million. And anything above 1.6 million is considered a pretty good year. So we're well into a really, really good year. Now, you got to be careful with that, Zach, because it is very spotty. Quebec and Ontario are still weak. They're up, but just up a little bit. Where the strength is centered in the resource provinces. So Alberta would be ranked number one. Saskatchewan would be up in the top two or three. And interestingly, so is Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia and Newfoundland are both doing well because they have oil. Mm-hmm. And so Manitoba's not too bad. BC is an interesting one because it's a lot softer than what we thought. I know you're calling from BC. And BC has got a little bit of overhang from the length of the Olympics. Your economy was so hot leading up to the Olympics, and that generated a lot of wealth, and a lot of wealth translated into a lot of vehicles being bought. And so for 2 or 3 years going up to the Olympics, the BC market led Canada with above-average expectations. And now that the Olympics are over, there's a little bit of cooling off. Still positive, though. It's just not as positive as the rest of Canada.
Do you notice a correlation between house values and vehicle purchases? So I own a house, and it's gone up in the last couple of years 10 or 20%. And on paper, I'm richer. You have the wealth effect. And you say, honey, let's go out and get a car. I'm feeling richer. So places like British Columbia that's starting to see house prices soften, maybe that's why they're holding back on car purchases. Is there any correlation there?
Yeah, well, absolutely, and you called it correctly. It's called the wealth effect, and the two big wealth items is, one, housing. That's relatively invisible, though. How many people really truly know what the value of their house is? I guess you can monitor your neighbors, but not a lot of people do that. But the other one that is more closely related is your equities portfolio in the stock market. You see it in the news every night, and when you get your envelope, if any of you have a RRSP and or investments in the stock market, you get your envelope every week and you open it up and you say, oh my God, you know, my portfolio is really doing well. You know, gosh, I made $4,000 last month on my RRSP. I'm wealthy. And you run out and, you feel like spending. You feel good. And it does two things also. One, it motivates you to spend. Probably not a great idea because that's on paper, your wealth. But the other thing, especially in the car industry, it's really driving the luxury premium market. The hottest segments we have are what we call the luxury / premium. An awful lot of vehicles in Canada we consider premium because they're not true luxury. Acura would be a good example of that, for instance.
And Buick is trying to open that up as the entry level luxury or premium market, right?
Yeah, you know, Buick doesn't do as good a job as Infiniti or Acura. And so maybe in the next section we could talk the full section about the premium luxury market. It's actually quite interesting, and it's really hot. And one of the hotbeds for the luxury market is actually Vancouver. So
yeah,
it might make a lot of sense.
Yeah, so. I want to get into, okay, so car sales are up this year. We talked a bit about the wealth effect people might be feeling in certain areas, especially those with strong resources and energy.
And you're right, by the way. It works both ways. When you open your envelope and you're up a lot, you kind of feel good. And when you open the envelope at the end of the month or you see your neighbor's house couldn't sell, you feel real bad.
Yeah.
And so you tend to sit on your hands a little bit.
And so overall, the Canadian market is up. Is there also a lot of incentives? We've talked about that over the years about how incentives really drive the market. Is there big incentive money on the table right now?
It's spotty. It's not as good as it was last year at this time. or even earlier this year. But, you know, there's an age-old saying in the auto industry, and people, especially at the dealer level, can really appreciate this. The car dealers can never get enough of the vehicles that are selling well, and they've always got too many of the ones that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the ones that aren't that typically have the incentive money. If a vehicle company or a car dealer can sell every one of a particular model that's on their car lot, why would they put a big incentive on it? There usually is something in the way of an incentive, even on a hot model, because that's the market, but that's baked into the price. Where you get the really big money are the vehicles that are not selling very well, and obviously there's a compromise. You might get a big discount, but you also may not be getting the exact vehicle you want. There are exceptions to that rule. Some companies get themselves into overall trouble, like General Motors was in a lot of trouble in 08, 09, and 10, and so they put a fair amount of incentive money on their most profitable, most popular vehicle, and that's the CK pickup trucks. I sit back and I wonder why, if you need profit, why would you give it away? But man, did it drive them off a lot of sales. And so,
but they weren't in a vacuum though. Ram and F-150 were giving incentives $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 off.
Well, you know, in its peak, this goes back a year ago now, just over a year ago. General Motors had $18,000 on some versions of the CK pickup truck for selected individuals, not everybody. Yeah, for instance, there's a youth discount or a student graduate that could have got $1,000, or if you traded in a GM product, you would have got $1,000 or $2,000. But if you added up all of the various discounts, you could get $18,000, $19,000 on a pickup truck. And an awful lot of people bought them. And what I say is if General Motors was stupid enough to put that kind of money in their pickup trucks, then a lot of consumers are stupid enough to buy them. You know, I did the same. My bride needed a new vehicle, and so I went out 3 or 4 weeks ago and took advantage of one of these 0% 84-month loans. I bought her a Nissan Altima. And I talked to the president just last week, and I was out there doing a presentation. I said, "Why are you doing that?" And he says, "Well, we're not doing it anymore. It just didn't make any sense."
But they're also getting ready for the brand new one to arrive any day now.
Yeah, exactly. This is going back to the thing. There's always never enough of the ones selling well. Too many of the ones that aren't. And at the end of model runs, you know, there's a new Altima coming this fall, and so they're clearing out the old ones. And so they got now they put this big 0% 84 months on it. The problem with all of these incentives, coming back to the GM one where the others match it pretty quickly, is they get stale. And so you can offer 0% financing, or you offer, you know, $1,000 free gasoline or free air conditioning. But as soon as everybody else offers it, and everybody else offers it pretty quickly, then your incentive is no better than anybody else's.
But some companies always have cheap money on the table. Hyundai and Kia spring to mind. If I open the paper and I don't see 0% interest, I'm shocked.
Well, yeah, but you got to be careful there. They tend to have something that will drive traffic, but it's usually not on the same vehicle for a long, long time. Under the Competition Act, so the Competition Bureau could really come down hard on these companies. There's a number of cases in the industry. In order to be able to offer a true discount, at some point you have to be selling that vehicle or tires or whatever you're selling at full price. Otherwise, it's considered price fixing.
We're speaking with Dennis DeRosier. We're going to continue our conversation with Dennis about the Canadian marketplace. If you want to go to my website at any time, you're more than welcome. It's motormouth.ca. Lots of interviews and articles, old radio shows, previous interviews with Dennis DeRosier. It's all available on the website. Coming up next, we're going to check in with Mark Bergevin from ADESA to find out about another great deal, somebody that's very happy, a good news story of the week. And we'll continue our conversation with Dennis DeRosier next on Driving. Hey, and welcome back to the show. Each and every week, Mark Bergevin joins us from Odessa Richmond Public Auction. The way it works, somebody goes in, puts their car in the auction, and they might not have done it before. They might be a repeat customer. So it's a great way to sell a car without anybody coming to your door, kicking your tires, and actually being around your house. Some people, Mark, they just don't like the whole interaction of having to sell a car, especially women, right? They don't know how to deal with somebody for a test drive. So you're an option that they can utilize.
Absolutely, and it's funny you should mention that, Zach, because that's what our good news story is about this week. It's about an 07 Kia Sportage. The lady had owned the car since new. She wanted to try and change it, you know, go for a change in a vehicle. She heard us on your radio program and decided to give us a try. She wasn't, again, uncomfortable with the people coming, knocking on her door and going for test drives, having visits, doesn't know who's going to come, making appointments. So anyway, she brought the car to us, Zach. We gave it an appraisal of about $9,800. 07 Sportage sold right on the ticket, $9,800. Fantastic story there.
Yeah, and she's happy and doesn't have to worry. And plus, you know, it takes up a lot of time having someone come to your door and they don't show up. I've had that happen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, people, lives are busy, right? This is a quick and simple way to get a vehicle sold and moved on.
Thanks, Mark. We'll speak to you next week.
You bet. Have a great week, Zach. Thank you.
Dennis DeRosier is my guest. He's Canada's leading auto analyst. And Dennis, the next line's yours.
Yeah, well, I'm called Canada's leading auto analyst because I'm also Canada's only auto analyst. So,
all right. Before the break, we talked about luxury, and you wanted to do a section just on luxury. Luxury is growing. Is that because baby boomers now have a little bit more money and they're wanting to treat themselves? Is that why it's growing?
Well, and that's the demographic effect. There's a, you know, the lead edge of the boomer is in their early 60s now. And, you know, they've made it in life, a lot of them anyway. They've created some wealth, so you have this wealth effect. Quite often they're at their end of their careers where they don't have a lot of expenses. You know, like my daughter's education is paid for, my house is paid for. You know, I take a paycheck and it goes into the bank other than groceries now. I don't have anything to spend it on.
You can send it to me. I could be your adopted child.
There's a lot of Canadians lined up for my money and it's all taxes. Sorry, I'm going to pass on that, Zach.
Okay.
But what happens is that you end up with these consumers wanting to treat themselves to the end of life. There's a lot of, at the end of their careers, and there's a lot of other things driving this. We have what's called in the industry the Sloan Ladder. Alf P. Sloan, who was the president and chairman of General Motors starting in the 20s right through to the 40s or 50s, invented this. And people don't realize it, but General Motors back in the teens was bankrupt. I think it was 17, 18, 19 in that range. And the DuPont Company owned the controlling shares of General Motors, and they put Alf Sloan in to run General Motors. And he studied the market, and he came up with what is now called the Sloan Ladder. I still believe in it. A lot of people don't. And this is that you get into the market at an entry level, so you would buy in at a Chevrolet, and then you'd move up. And thus you have Chevrolet, Pontiac, Buick, Oldsmobile, and Cadillac. And when you've reached it in life, you've made it, you know, you used to be able to go out and buy a Cadillac. Now, it shows you how much the luxury market has changed. Now, the top luxury brand in Canada is BMW, and they fight it out with Mercedes. Mercedes was number one last year and a year before. BMW was tracking the 2 years before. They kind of bounce back and forth. So you go BMW and Mercedes fight it out for number one, and then Audi, and then you get into Lexus as the number four. Cadillac is actually seventh or eighth on the list.
Mm-hmm.
But why people are buying them, there's this demographic effect. There's also an interesting one in that, and you see it very much in Vancouver. Going back at when we opened up the border to free trade with NAFTA and FTA, consumers started to shop for vehicles in the United States. And the vehicles with the biggest price differential are luxury products. And so we were bringing in thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of, you're only allowed to bring in a used product, not a new. But you were able to bring, but we brought in tens of thousands of used luxury vehicles over this past decade. Well, the first, and that was the entry level luxury product for most consumers who wanted it. And so they bought their first one used, brought in from the U.S. or used in the regular marketplace. And now they're back looking for a second one or a third one. And they're saying, well, I did that used vehicle one. Now it's time I deserve a new one. And that's really providing an upside to the luxury market as well.
But there's also another part of it is like you see people and like you'll get a girl that like say your daughter, I'm not sure she still lives at home, but if she lives at home and she's got a job, say at the Bay, she still wants Chanel sunglasses or a Louis Vuitton purse, even though she doesn't make a lot of money. So that's why I think luxury might be growing, but they're making luxury more attainable in less expensive cars. Things like heated seats and satellite radio navigation, you can get a heated steering wheel in a Kia Rio subcompact now.
Well, exactly. But when you just look at the luxury market itself, another reason why it's been growing is they've expanded their segmentation. You know, you have two series BMW. You know, the big luxury market in Canada is compact luxury. So the three series, the C-Class, the Audi A4, are considered compact sized vehicles. Well, they've gone down to B cars. You know, the Mercedes B car, B class, the BMW two series.
One series.
And these are smaller vehicles, a little more attainable. So what's developing is a slow ladder just in the luxury segment. So you get in at the one series, and you move to three, and then the five, and then the seven, or you stick an SUV in there at some point. And the same with Mercedes. You start with the B class, and you move to a C class, and then an E class, and then all, you know, and when you really have made it, you get up to the S class. These vehicles are quite spectacular, and an awful lot of, you mentioned an interesting thing, because a lot of technology that you find on everyday Joe Blow cars, like your heated steering wheel on your Rio, starts in luxury. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the test for it all. And then once it gets developed and you get some volume, the prices can come down and it can actually be added into a mass market car. And it's, again, all about, just like the incentive issue that we talked about last segment, how you got to differentiate yourself. That's why incentives keeps changing. Every month you have a different incentive because you got to be different from everybody else. These little luxury features that you find in mass market vehicles is a way that companies can differentiate themselves. And so, gee whiz, every single ordinary Joe Blow compact car has got regular seating. I'm going to put a heated seat in my car. That's going to give me that little bit of an edge over the competitors, or I'm going to put a heated steering wheel, or I'm going to put in ABS brakes, or I'm going to put in some of the other power options that are available, an extra cup holder, along those lines.
Hey, Dennis, we've got to take a quick break. We'll continue with Dennis DeRosier next on Driving. And welcome back. Dennis DeRosier is my guest. He's a regular here on this radio show. We catch up with Dennis to talk about the auto industry, Canada's leading auto analyst. And we've talked about the overall health of the economy, the luxury market. We're going to go to the other extreme, which is the used market. And I'm hearing one of the sponsors, actually, of this radio show is Odessa Auction, public auction. And they tell me that there's not a lot of really good used cars in the marketplace, and they're demanding a slight premium. Big part of that is because during the downturn in the economy, we didn't have a lot of lease cars going out, so they're not coming back into the market. So there's less of them to purchase. Are you hearing the same thing?
Well, I study it, and I've kind of developed the whole theory on it, and I'll tell you exactly what's happening. That is indeed true, but you got to be careful is that there's at least three very distinctive different used vehicle markets. And I kind of divide them by five-year increments, so 1 to 4, 1 to 5-year-old vehicles. I don't want to be too precise at five. It could be 3, 4, 5, 6 years. But 1 to 4, 1 to 5, 1 to 6-year-old, and then 5 to 10, 11, and then 11-plus. And they're very, very different marketplaces. The first one, the younger used vehicle market, so this would be 6 months out to perhaps as old as 5 years old. The main supply of those vehicles come from two sources, vehicles coming off their lease and vehicles that are coming out of fleet, primarily daily rentals. And with the 2008-09 financial crisis, the leasing market collapsed. We used to lease about 45 to 50% of our vehicles, and it dropped down to single digits. Literally, it was 4 or 5%. And the fleet market dropped down quite dramatically. Usually about 18-19% of vehicles being bought every month are fleet vehicles. Primarily, like I said, primarily daily rental, but delivery vehicles and government vehicles and utility vehicles. And with the financial crisis, small business was in trouble. It dropped down to 11 or 12%. Well, that was in 08, 09. And here we are 12, you know, four years later. Those vehicles that would normally be coming off fleet and off lease are just not there. You know, if you didn't sell them to begin with, they're not available. And a shortage of supply is leading to a difficulty finding them and higher prices in the younger used vehicle market. It's the exact opposite in the middle-aged. If you go back to the 5 years before the financial crisis, so this goes from 2002, 2003, right through to 2008, Canadians bought a record number of new vehicles. They were buying close to 1.7 million vehicles a year. And the market is absolutely overloaded with used 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old product. Now, you got to be a little more careful with that product. Obviously, if it's 8 or 9 years old, it's got a lot of kilometers on it. But there's still an awful lot of really, really, really good quality middle-aged used vehicles out there, particularly the Japanese.
Yeah, because if you buy a car that's been very well maintained and is a reliable brand, there's savings to be had in those vehicles.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the workmen I had out this week to my farm here, he was telling me that he was looking for a 7, 8, 9-year-old Toyota Camry. And he looked high and low. I'm down in the Stratford area of Ontario, and he ended up going all the way down to Chatham, about 2-hour drive to find one, because it's just that good. You know, the consumer's been driving these Camrys and Accords for 7, 8, 9 years, and they love them, and they're just not putting them up for sale. But when you can find them, you might pay a little bit more, but they're pretty good vehicles. The cheapest, the least expensive used vehicle of any sort of quality in the marketplace that's available in droves are minivans.
Mm-hmm.
Minivans were very popular at the turn of the century. You know, the Chrysler Caravan and Voyager, and go down the list, Sienna and Odyssey, et cetera, et cetera. And Canadians bought hundreds of thousands of these vehicles between year 2000 and 2007 and 8. And those vehicles are now 5 to 10 years old. And because there's so many of them, they're a dime a dozen. You can pick them up really inexpensively. Make sure that if you did buy a used vehicle like that, you get it really thoroughly checked out. But an awful lot of these vehicles are really good vehicles. There's nothing wrong with a 7, 8-year-old Toyota Sienna or Honda Odyssey, you know. And, in fact, you can find really good Voyagers and Caravans also.
Yeah, the thing is that...
You can literally pick them up for a few thousand bucks.
Yeah, and the thing I say to people is, if you have a family with 3 kids, and people call to this radio show all the time, I want to buy a crossover, an SUV, I want to get in and out easily, I want to sit up high. I said, well, you're describing a minivan. There is nothing better for moving people around than a minivan. And as you said, there's lots of good ones out there. And some of the cheapest are those Dodge and Chrysler products. But I always
Absolutely.
I always tell people, bake into the price. They say, well, maybe something needs to be repaired. I said, well, even if something does need to be repaired, it's so inexpensive that it's still cheap transportation.
Well, but let's put it in a different way. Then the average transaction price for a vehicle today, if it's financed, is somewhere around $500 to $700 a month of financing cost if you bought it new. You can go out and buy one of these used vehicles, so it's going to cost you $1,000, $1,500 to maintain it versus new. That's 2 monthly payments.
Yeah.
You know, you still got 10 months where you're driving almost for free. And so, you know, there were and the Chrysler Dodge Caravan and the Chrysler Voyager are really good vehicles. Now, you got to be careful. Again, get it safety checked and get a mechanic to look at it. The other way is there's a company called Carproof now.
Yeah.
That does title checks and things like that to make sure it wasn't an accident vehicle.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've done study on the private market, and the private market really takes off in vehicles that are 8 or 9 years old and older. There's not a lot of big private market in younger vehicles. But you get into the private market, and as many as 1 out of 4 vehicles are sold by a curbsider.
Is that right?
And there's a good chance, oh, yeah, it's very high. And there's a good chance that it's been accidented or has got major problems, and the guy has just kind of papered over them, and so you get this thing, and then he's gone. And one of the real telling points that you're dealing with one of these guys is he says, well, just pay me cash and we can avoid paying tax.
Yeah.
If anybody tries to sell you a vehicle so you can try to screw the government, avoid paying tax, there's a good chance that you're getting a bad deal. You might save yourself $500 or $200 in provincial sales tax, but you could end up with a lemon and end up costing you thousands and thousands of dollars. So I'd be really careful buying private. I believe that there's a lot of reputable used vehicle dealers, and there's a lot of reputable new vehicle dealers that sell used as well. And there's usually, like, BC has a used vehicle dealer association that certifies their used vehicles, and if they're not a member of the association, don't buy from them. Mm-hmm. And same in Ontario. They have a used vehicle association that certifies their used dealers. But a used vehicle can be a really great bargain, and nothing wrong with an awful lot of them, and they're selling like hotcakes. And I could say a middle-aged one, 5 to 10 years, there's a lot of them out there. I would avoid the third market was vehicles that are over 10, 11, 12 years old. One of the reasons why there's a big used vehicle market is vehicles last so long. The average vehicle being bought today, if you went out and bought a new vehicle, it's still going to be on the road 300,000 kilometers later unless it was in an accident. And that's the average. There's a lot of them will be on the road for 400,000 kilometers. And most consumers only drive about 25,000 kilometers a year, 20 to 25. And so if the average is going to be on the road for 300,000, that's 12 to 15 years.
Yeah, easily.
That a vehicle is on the road. Yeah, at 20,000 kilometers, that's 15 years.
We're going to continue our conversation with Dennis DeRosier about trends, but next, it's Rick Balkin with NewCarSellOff.com. Each and every week, we check in with Rick Balkin from NewCarSellOff.com. Now, last week, Rick, you announced you have some new updates to the website. What's new about NewCarSellOff.com?
Well, we've had consumer feedback on our site, Zach, and one of the biggest things that we've improved upon is the ability to search by model. So as opposed to just searching by type and make, now you can narrow it right down to the model you're looking for. The other thing that we've done, Zach, is we've been heard that a lot of people like to shop in their own locale, so we've also put a filter in by province. But again, bear in mind that the filter by province and by model will eliminate a lot of the stuff from your search. So, in fact, some of the better deals that you may have found by more generic search won't be there. So, again, I suggest searching by type of vehicle, make a vehicle, and price range, and get the best possible results for your search.
Yeah, you want to cast as big a net as possible because there might be something that you hadn't thought of, and then when you see it, you go, hey, I kind of like that.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Now, you're getting feedback, obviously, all the time, like through email. Now you've got them with a more official kind of look, right?
That's right. What we're trying to do is find a way to make the site a better experience for the buyer. So we're asking survey questions to find out how to improve our shopping experience for the customer that is looking at the site. And what we're going to do is give that to the dealerships and say, hey, if you put more pictures on our site, the customers like that better, and they'll consequently come and look at your vehicle. So we want some of that feedback that we can give the dealerships to how to improve our site to help you improve your shopping experience with us.
Okay, so you say it's deeply discounted prices with full warranty. How do you achieve that, or how do the dealers do that?
Well, a lot of times the dealers, in fact, will have cars and trucks on their lot that for no reason to themselves haven't sold. So, for example, we could have a last year model car still in the lot that hasn't sold. We could have a demonstrator that hasn't sold. We can, in fact, have too many of the same, and some of these cars haven't sold. So these dealers are really motivated to sell them, and they're deeply discounting the prices in order to do so.
All right, that's Rick Balkin from NewCarSellOff.com, deeply discounted prices with full warranties. And Rick, we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Zach.
We're in our final segment here with Dennis DeRosier. And this last segment, Dennis, I want to talk about the trends in the marketplace. We've seen gas prices spike recently. I paid over $1.50 a liter. It's coming off a little bit in light of the Eurozone crisis, the price of oil.
$1.50 a liter, okay. Yeah. High gas prices. Everybody's squawking about high gas prices. They're in your face. You know what one of the worst performing segments in Canada is?
The
it's
oil sands.
The small little subcompact B cars.
Oh, really? Yeah,
yeah.
Why is that? It makes no sense to me. And I've driven the Fiesta, the Kia Rio, the Hyundai Accent, you know, even the little Yaris. These are all little great little cars. Why?
I did focus groups on consumers that had owned one of them, and when they came back to the market, they bought a much bigger car. And when you talk to them, it came down to a very simple thing. Every one of them said exactly what you said. Man, I love my Yaris. I was a fit boy. It was really, really neat. It was just too darn small.
Yeah.
I want a bigger vehicle. And consumers in Canada aren't ready to compromise on size. So they say, gee whiz, I can afford a little bit bigger vehicle. I realize it burns a little bit more gas, but I deserve a bigger vehicle. And so they move back up into
a compact or even an intermediate size or move up to a small SUV.
And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. People are saying, well, they want that little luxury. They want the latte at Starbucks. They want the Chanel sunglasses, and women often will spend a lot of money on a purse even though they don't have, you know, even if they don't even own a home. But so they
and
say
I,
to
and
themselves,
I deserve it, and I'm going to get it, and I'm going to treat myself and bugger the world.
That's right. So if I'm going to have a car, if I'm going to have a car payment, I'm going to have a car payment on a nicer car. It's basically what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And then you just get into some of these discounts and the low rate financing and come back to fuel efficiency. So you move up to a bigger vehicle. These bigger vehicles have become radically better fuel efficient. Now, they're not as fuel efficient as the tiny little ones, but when you go out and you buy any compact car, you're getting really good fuel efficiency, and you can go into some of the, you know, that you get into a CR-V or a RAV4 SUV, Ford Escape, the fuel efficiency of these are pretty darn good. So even as you move bigger, you're really not taking much of a penalty in fuel efficiency in many cases.
No, that leads me to the next point. So, and this is the argument I have on this radio show all the time. People call in and they say, I want to buy a hybrid, I want to buy an electric car. And I said, the biggest problem with these vehicles is the fact that the regular gasoline cars are becoming so efficient. We have cars now that are getting 5 liters per 100 kilometers. And then you throw in the diesel technology, and some of that is some of the best in the marketplace. So what do you say to people that basically say we should all be driving hybrids and electric cars?
Well, I say, first of all, let me put it in perspective. I'm a tree hugger. I'm an environmental conscious person. I do this every day. I try to think of the environment, and so I'm very cognizant of it. At the same time, if I'm going to go out and buy most, not all, but most of the hybrid or the alternate fuel technologies, I have to make a compromise in my life. You know, now the Prius is a wonderful vehicle, but it's small. You know, these plug-in electric vehicles, they don't have trunk space, or they don't have the design I like, or they don't have the pickup or the power. And I don't mind being environmentally sensitive, and I will jump through hoops. But at my stage in life, and I think most consumers believe, are like me, they may be environmentalists, but they don't want to make a compromise in their life. And so these technologies will eventually take off and be very successful when they develop to a point where consumers can get exactly what they want and have it a plug-in electric or a hybrid or diesel, etc. One of the reasons diesel sells so well, and they sell like hotcakes in Canada, is because the consumers that buy them, no compromise. These are fabulous vehicles that fully meet every part of your expectation as a buyer. And thus, Volkswagen leads the market in diesel, and all their TDI product, well, they have a hard time getting them. They're so popular. They can sell every single one they get.
And I just want to jump in quickly because you mentioned earlier the strength in the luxury market between BMW and Mercedes. And in the luxury segment, Mercedes leads with the number of diesel options. I just drove the new GLK compact luxury crossover that's going to have a diesel this fall. And the thing is, I think they're winning on that score as well because they offer something that nobody else has.
Yeah, exactly. And then BMW has hybrid 5 Series, and it's not selling well at all. And so diesel is successful because the luxury buyer absolutely refuses to compromise. Put aside the mass market buyer who doesn't have a choice. They say, oh, well, gee whiz, I can't get exactly what I want, but I don't have the money to get what I want. A luxury buyer, he can go out and buy any product he wants. And so why would he compromise in any way, shape, or form?
And so
this is going to be the big challenge.
Yeah. In essence, with the diesel buyer, they're getting something more. It's a more enjoyable driving experience.
Exactly. And consumers don't have trouble paying more. Look at the luxury market. Like I say, it's hot and growing the fastest growing segments. Consumers pay more, a lot more for luxury, and often don't get more. They get a little bit more, but maybe they don't get as good a value for money.
I always wonder just quickly about the Chevy Volt and the Nissan Leaf, which are both electric cars. One is an extended...
And the IMF, the Mitsubishi IMF.
I always wondered why General Motors didn't bring the Volt out as a Cadillac and Nissan bring out the Leaf as an Infiniti and to justify the price of these things.
Well, I think that's because of the politics of it. Optics-wise, the politicians would go nuts on them. If they offered them only as a luxury model, the politicians would come back and say, yeah, you know, sure, you're green, but only for the people with a lot of money. you know, you're just selling it to the luxury market. So by offering it to the mass market, I think they broaden the appeal a little bit and satisfy the politicians.
Hey, Dennis, in our final minute here, any final thoughts before we head into summer?
Well, I think it's going to be a good summer for sales. Summer is normally a light market. Consumers tend to do a lot of driving in the summer, and then they get into car trouble. And so when they really buy, it's come September. But look for a really good year, and for the next two or three years, it's going to get better. We're heading into good news. It's a case of how good a news, not whether it's good or bad news. And I'm hoping that, you know, we have breakout years this year, next year, the following year. This industry really deserves it, and I think consumers are going to win really big because the vehicle companies take all that money you pay and they pour it into technology. And so the more vehicles they sell, the better technology this consumer is going to get down the road.
And it's mind-boggling. I go to all of these launch events. The stuff that is in a modern car today just spins your head. Hey, Dennis, enjoy your summer. Have a great time on your farm this summer, and we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, we'll talk to you in the fall.
Thanks, Dennis. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye.